It is a slipping, sinking feeling. You're slipping and cannot seem to find anything to grip. A sinking feeling that you can't seem to rise above. It's like a looming dark cloud that follows you and rains on any parade of happiness and hopefulness you have. There's a word that encapsulates all of those feelings, and for a few moments, we'll talk about it on A Word with Anthony Walker. Depression, noun, a depressed part or place, hollow or low place on a surface, low spirits, gloominess, dejection, sadness. As we've discussed in previous episodes, we all deal with pressure in a myriad of ways. There are those that use the pressures they experience as a catalyst for progression and growth in their lives. Sometimes people become hardened within themselves, fortifying their inner strength to combat the pressures of life. But sometimes we press those things down. Remember, things that are suppressed and repressed will in some way be expressed. Allow me to use your imagination for a moment to generate a mental image of what we're describing. You've seen this prank toy that looks like a small tube of nuts or chips. When a person attempts to open it, out shoots 1 to 3 long snakes, obviously fake, but shocking and frightening nonetheless. Hold that image for just a moment. In order to set up this prank, someone has to take these snakes. Again, these are fake, and pack them into this can. They are merely springs with a little fabric on the outside. Springs are coils of metal that have the capacity to store potential energy. When compressed, all of this energy is just waiting for release. Once someone opens the lid, all of that energy is released or expressed, and the snakes are all over the place. In addition to the energy of the springs released, the energy in the room is released as well. Some are shocked and frightened, so they release a scream and jump. And the prankster releases a whole can of laughter as well. In one small dimension, repression and expression can occur in this way. The feelings, anxieties, and unresolved situations are the snakes that are packed into a can of forgetfulness. Once the lid of denial is secure, it's out of sight and out of mind. But then, for some reason, a close person, a friend, or a loved one wanders through the pantry of your mind looking for something, grabs the can, and curiosity pushes them to open it. Then, boom, an outburst of energy, raw emotion, old feelings about old situations spew out of this can. Then there's a mess in the room that has to be cleaned up. But there's another image I want you to envision, a black hole. Again, I don't want to get too technical or specific, but bear with me. A black hole is a star that is basically imploded due to its own gravity and mass. Once a star reaches a particular mass, it has the right conditions to turn into a black hole. When it becomes a black hole, it begins to suck in everything. Stars, planets, asteroids, comets, everything. Not only that, but nothing can escape. Not even light. At one point, it was thought it would be impossible to find and see a black hole. But astronomers did find black holes. They would see stars seemingly be eaten, siphoned off by a small invisible point. Another way they spotted black holes is by finding a spot in space with unusual gravity. and plumes of light being shot out. But I thought you said that light couldn't escape a black hole. Where is the light coming from? It isn't escaping the black hole, but it is the light that is emitted from particles being pushed away so violently, trying to pass by the gravity of the black hole. There's light that emits on either side. In this mental imagery, I find some qualities of depression. Sometimes depression is marked by being so overwhelmed and so pressured that one emotionally collapses under their own weight. And this depressed state seems to suck everything. Depression sucks away the energy and even the motivation behind the energy. So not only does one not have the energy to get up, they don't even want to get up. It sucks away happiness from what should be a happy situation. Happy holidays are just holidays. Happy birthdays are just birthdays or just another day. Achievements and accomplishments are just moments. Nothing really viewed as achieved or accomplished. And whatever light is present is either sucked in or pushed away violently. It is difficult and sometimes next to impossible to cheer it up or brighten it up because even desire, aspiration, and hope are seemingly sucked away. Granted, we all have low moments from time to time. I wouldn't call that depression necessarily. Those that are depressed experience seasons, sometimes years, of those symptoms. Sometimes it's triggered by an acute tragedy or painful event. Other times it is triggered by an implosion of sorts. And sometimes the trigger may not be known, but the evidence is plainly seen. I found a prophet in Scripture that exhibited some of these symptoms. He was a man by the name of Elijah. Like many prophets of old, Elijah struggled with accepting and walking in the calling of God for his life. Sometimes God would have Elijah to say or do amazing things, miraculous things for his glory. Sometimes it would be a message to a corrupt and evil ruler. Sometimes it was a message for a rebellious and unrepentant people. Sometimes it was a lesson that Elijah had to learn in trusting and following God. Following a trilogy of chapters full of dynamic miracles displaying the matchless power of God, we find a lowly and depressed Elijah. In 1 Kings chapter 17, God uses Elijah to declare to King Ahab that the rain would stop and there would be a drought, and subsequently a famine. This is an incredible declaration to a king. Firstly, kings of that day viewed themselves as deity. Secondly, being king meant that you were in charge of provision for your people. So if it is a drought or a famine and you haven't made any preparation, you, sir, are a terrible king. And thirdly, who is Elijah? Who is this man and who is his God? Elijah runs out to a creek, and God commanded birds to feed him there. He then directs Elijah to go to Zarephath to find a widow there. Well, he gets there, and the woman is about to fix her last meal so that she and her son could die. God miraculously provides for her and her son, and they live. In the next chapter, Elijah is challenged in a battle of the gods. Let the real God please stand up. He faced off in this showdown to prove whose God was really real, Baal, the God that Ahab and his prophets served, or the one true God of Elijah. So they set up a challenge. A sacrifice would be placed on an altar. Whoever's God devours the sacrifice wins. So the prophets of Baal went first. They built an altar, put a sacrifice on it, and called out for Baal to devour it. They called and called and called. Elijah even mocked at one point, saying, "Perhaps Baal is hard of hearing, or maybe he's gone on vacation." Subsequently, nothing happened. Then Elijah builds an altar, places a sacrifice on it, and for added measure, drenched the altar with water. One would think there's no way that God could burn up that sacrifice. And as soon as Elijah called on God, fire came down and burnt up the sacrifice. Wow, what an amazing victory for God as well as his manservant and prophet Elijah. But Jezebel, Ahab's wife, was not one for celebrating. She sent forth a threat to kill Elijah. And that was the trigger. When Elijah saw the message, he ran for his life. He ran for a day's journey and wound up deep in the woods under a juniper tree. In his anguish, he cried to God to take his life, saying, "It is enough. I am no better than my fathers." In other words, Elijah was saying, "I've had it up to here. I'm overwhelmed, and you might as well get someone else to do it because I'm no better than the rest of them." Afterward, he would fall asleep. Just a brief note, he loses the hope and the desire to live. He sees no value in himself and loses energy emotionally and physically. Then an angel came and prepared a cake and some water for him and woke him up. "Get up and eat." He ate and went back to sleep. Do you see it? He just wanted to eat and sleep. Then the angel did it again, but said something interesting. "Get up and eat, because the journey is too great for you." The truth of the matter is that this journey called life is too great for us without God. You cannot achieve the fullness of your journey without God. Our problem is that we attempt to rely on our own strength. We are finite. He's infinite. We are flawed. He's perfect. We get tired. He never sleeps nor slumbers. We need God. So Elijah ate this time, I believe, with a different frame of mind. And the text says that he ran off the strength of that food for 40 days to the mountain of God. When he arrives, God says, "What are you doing here?" That's a double question. Not only is God asking, "Why are you in this place?" but he's also asking, "What is it that you're doing here?" He replied, "I've been very zealous for you, God. The people you've called me to lead are rebellious and murderous, even to the point of killing prophets. I'm the only one trying to do your will. Just take my life." God responded with a visual array of a message. He showed him these great and frightening signs. He told him to stand in front of the cave. God caused a great wind to blow, and followed by an earthquake, and that followed by a fire, and then followed by a still voice. We sometimes become distracted by the grand, the big, the loud, but we overlook the still and the quiet. In the still, quiet voice, God reminds Elijah that he's already got a relief plan for him with a couple of backups. And as it relates to his overwhelming feeling, God said, "I've got 7,000 in Israel that are still faithful and have not bowed their heads to Baal." God is reminding Elijah of his foresight, his wisdom, and his provision. What's the point of it all? Even great people like Elijah can experience a bout of depression, even after a string of great success. Sometimes the trigger can be seemingly small. Be observant to the signs: a lack of desire, hope, positivity, a lack of self-worth, a lack of motivation and energy. These are signs that can be indicators of depression. How did he come out of it? Well, he left the area. He vented to God. He rested. Then he ate. And if you want to be technical, he ate some cake. Then he ran. He talked and listened to God and gained his reassurance from the Creator himself. Now, a psychologist might phrase it this way. Perhaps you need to take a break. Seek some spiritual counsel, get some good nutrition, and get in some good physical activity. I tend to find comfort in the fact that God has people in place around each of us to remind us of our value and to help us put things in perspective. Sometimes we put too much weight on things that don't matter and not enough weight on things that do matter. As a frequent public speaker, I encounter hundreds and sometimes thousands of people weekly. I have to be careful not to hold too tightly to the 200 great jobs I get, but by the same token, I can't hold on too tightly to the two people who weren't impressed. But there are a few people who are closest to me, who has my best interest at heart, whose voice has the magnitude of 50,000 to me. If you find yourself overwhelmed, understand that this journey of life is too much for just you. Remember that God is here for you, and there are a few people that are in your corner as well. Don't forget to take a break, take a nap, eat a piece of cake, and get in a good run straight to the throne room of God. Thank you so much for sharing a word with Anthony Walker.